We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You're listening to Fast Food Film Friends, the podcast hosted by two pals whose union is brought to the brink of total collapse by the end of every episode.
Wow. Great, great analogy. I like that. So that's very nice. That is correct. This week we're talking about Civil War, Alex Garland's latest movie, while eating the only thing that's even more American than violent revolution, apple pie.
That's right, Kevin. It's time for an apple pie showdown between two behemoths of the American South.
Woo!
We'll be eating Popeye's cinnamon apple pie and KFC's new apple pie poppers.
We did try to find some union apple pies, but not a lot of fast food chains named after the North for some reason. So.
Turns out the upper half of the U.S. really is into slushies.
Yeah.
And
just, that's about
coffee,
it.
Coffee.
Bacon, egg, and cheese. That's pretty much it. Not a lot of apple pie floating around up north, but we got two southern behemoths, like you said. I'm very excited to compare the two, because I don't think I've had either of this.
No, so actually, before we go on, the reason we chose these two in particular is that not only are they from restaurants that have U.S. states in the name, Louisiana and Kentucky,
boom,
but they are the only two apple pie desserts that we've not yet eaten.
Correct.
In terms of fast food.
Correct.
We've had Burger King, McDonald's.
Taco Bell's empanada.
Yes, we've had it like four or five from different places,
yeah.
And I'm never gonna say no to one.
No, I don't either. What would you say is your favorite? We had a mean one from somewhere, but I don't want to plant that seed in your head.
Well, I know that we had a great apple pie from Burger King.
Yes, so
but,
alarmingly good from Burger King.
And Taco Bell's caramel apple pie empanada, rest in peace.
Yeah,
is a classic.
Yeah, I think isn't it back? Is it not back?
I feel like I would have seen in the light in the sky.
The logo flashed and you would have run over there to help save people from not ordering it. Okay, maybe it's not back. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought I saw it as an option.
After the severe heartbreak you experienced that time you learned that they didn't have it, I feel like...
I should have learned.
I feel like you would have just like levitated to my house and been like, we have to go together.
I'm so sure. Well, I was looking up apple pie saying, what's more American than Civil War? Apple pie. And I swear I looked it up. Could have been an old article where somebody was writing about, like, you know, historically the best apple pies in the game. So, all right, maybe it's not back. If it ever comes back, it's fucking delicious. And go to Taco Bell, and I bet it's going to be better than both of these today. But we'll find out. We'll find out. From IMDb, the plot summary of Civil War reads as follows. A journey across a dystopian future America, following a team of military-embedded journalists as they race against time to reach D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. That's a meaty synopsis, man. That's an exciting one. I think it gets you amped up reading that.
And descending upon our tummies, from Popeyes.com, the cinnamon apple pie features a warm, crispy crust on the outside and hot cinnamon apple goodness on the inside.
Mm.
And from KFC.com, apple pie poppers are bite-sized pieces of pastry filled with warm apple pie filling and enveloped in a buttery and flaky crust.
I'm concerned about the crust-to-filling ratio on those, because I feel like as poppers, they're going to be made small, and it's going to be too crusty and not nearly enough filling.
I was thinking the same thing. They appear to be, from the picture, kind of like a pizza roll size situation. They seem to have the... What's that called when you have an apple pie and you, like, you kind of vent it
you
to
put
get,
those
like,
beautiful notches on top?
Yeah, to get... Yeah. And then some of that apple pie filling rises in the bake.
Oh, that's the good stuff.
I'm hoping these have that because they look like it from the picture. But then your Popeye's apple pie, similar to a McDonald's, it's it's your rectangular, pretty standard apple pie pocket.
Yeah, I feel like the KFC version is basically that, like, cut in half, essentially, is what they're doing.
But enclosed.
Ravioli style.
So, yeah, does the... I mean, the crust is my favorite part of the apple pie.
I do like
when
the
I
crust.
Was a young kid, I used to kind of throw the apples to the side.
Wow.
And just eat the goo
and
the crust.
That tracks.
And then at some point, I reincorporated nutrients.
You've always loved your goo. I just can't keep you away from it. Wherever it is, you're usually crawling towards it. I imagine as a child, your parents had a very hard time keeping you out of just puddles and general piles of goo.
Kevin, I would love to play a game with you.
Ooh.
Before our food is here.
Nathan, you know how much I love things that are new? More than anything in the world. So I'm very excited for this.
Speaking of new, very new developments, in this film, Civil War, the U.S. is divided into five new factions.
Yeah.
States divvied up into their own. So we have the Florida Alliance, which makes up most of the southeastern portion of the country. The Western Forces, which is kind of the northwestern states. We have the loyalist states, the states loyal to the federal government, makes up most of the states.
Yeah.
And we have the Republic of California and the Second Republic of Texas. So I want to ask you, which do you think you align with politically?
Great question.
I have a better question for you.
Okay, fine. I was excited to talk just straight politics.
I have compiled a list of all major fast food chains and the location in which they were founded.
Yeah.
And I've divvied them up into these five factions.
Okay.
And I would like to, actually, before I read them to you, I want you to guess what you think. If you could choose to be a part of one of these groups for no reason other than the fast food that's available there.
Yeah.
And all of our favorite fast food places were divvied up into their five regions. And you couldn't cross the border. You had to stick with your one. Looking at this map.
Yeah.
Which do you think you would stick with?
Oh, boy. Just without knowing which ones are in which ones?
Yeah, but I'll read you the list after this.
I honestly think, God damn. I honestly think the loyalist states or the Florida Alliance would be where I would end up. I hate to say the Florida Alliance because those are the states where I would never want to live, but they've cranked out some solid fast food from those. I mean, both things we're trying tonight would be in the Florida Alliance. The loyalist states, I mean, you got basically the entire East Coast until you get down to the part where you don't want to be. And then Republic of California would probably be pretty good too. Texas, I don't think, has done anything creatively with fast food ever. Maybe Whataburger. I'm going to go with where did White Castle start? That's the one that I want to know. I think it started in Minnesota.
There were a few that I looked up that I thought had to have been wrong.
Yeah.
The answer I found.
I think White Castle started in Minnesota. Minnesota, unfortunately, instead of staying loyalist, they ended up going with the Western forces. But
doesn't that seem so wrong?
It seems absolutely wrong.
There's a few, we'll get into this, but there's some divisions here that make no sense. And one of them is Minnesota joining forces with, it doesn't.
Like Idaho and, doesn't fit. The Dakotas. They would definitely have stuck with the loyalist ones. I'm gonna say Florida Alliance if I have to.
So let me read you these.
I think fast food-wise, that's going to be the best option by far.
Here they are. So the Florida Alliance, each of these is alphabetical. Burger King, Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
So Checkers and Rally's is kind of like a Hardee's Carl's Jr. situation where it's the same thing, but just different names, different regions. They're actually going to be divvied up because one's in one. So Checkers is part of the Florida Alliance.
Yep.
You got McAllister's, Moe's, Popeye's, Raising Cane's.
Hell yeah.
Sonic Drive-In.
Yep.
And Zaxby's.
Okay.
The Republic of California, Carl's Jr., again, divorced.
Yeah.
Del Taco, In-N-Out, Jack in the Box, McDonald's, Panda Express, and Taco Bell.
Oh, fuck, that's a good lineup. For one state, that's prolific for California. I mean, those are some absolute bangers.
It's some bang for your state right there.
Wow. Okay.
The Second Republic of Texas has Church's Chicken, Mooyah, Whataburger, and Wingstop.
Okay, so quantity-wise, low. Quality is very high for those four. I mean,
Mooyah is one
high.
Of my favorites, right?
Yeah, that's a shocking list, because I guess, you know, they don't do it often, but they do it right.
Now, the loyalist states, which, as you described, is... I think what we should do, we should, like, post a picture on Instagram.
Yeah.
And people can follow along and try to, you know, make
pop
their choice.
Pop the logos all over.
The loyalists, it's really just the whole Midwest and the whole East Coast. We have Arby's, Bojangles, Chipotle, Culver's, Dairy Queen, Domino's, Dunkin', Five Guys, Freddy's, which is frozen custard and burgers, Hardee's, Jersey Mike's, Jimmy John's, KFC. KFC is part of the loyalists.
Wow.
If you look at that map, it's Kentucky up top and Tennessee.
You're right.
Down below.
You're right. So again, we're frontlining this episode? Wow, we are right on the front lines.
Long John Silver's, Noodles & Company, Panera, Papa John's, Pizza Hut, Rally's of Checkers and Rally's, Qdoba, Quiznos, Shake Shack, Subway, Wendy's, and White Castle.
I mean, loyalty goes a long way. And I think the loyalist states have stayed together because they know they can exist on the food that they've created alone. They don't need anyone else.
Eliminated everything that's extraneous. They covered their bases and said, we don't need the rest of it.
I mean, that's a great list. I mean, when you think fast food, those are staples on that list. But they're not stars. They're not standout stars. They're the ones you go to regularly. You're not like, oh, this is a treat. It's more like a, I need sustenance. Let's go.
Yeah.
where I feel like California and the Florida Alliance both have kind of those weird ones that just get you a little excited. You know, that's not something you eat all the time. Maybe a little higher end fast food. Like Panera, I don't want to be associated with Panera really ever.
For that reason, you're
yeah,
out?
Yeah, for that reason with the loyal estates, I'm out.
Now the Western Forces,
they have to ready be for this? Fucked.
Starbucks and Taco John's.
Yeah, good luck. Just diarrhea for days.
That's why they had to go to D.C.
Oh, my God.
In the movie. They're yeah. like, we can't eat shit.
We got to get out of here. We got to get out of here. That, just those two. I mean, those states are just empty. Whenever I look at a map, like the Electoral College and stuff, I'm like, those ones are just like 20 people who all own ranches, and they eat Taco Bell and drink Starbucks, and that's all they do.
If land voted, they would be threatened.
Oh, I mean, they'd be killing it. But luckily it doesn't. That's a fascinating little study there, though. I'm very intrigued by that. And I'm happy that I think I made the right prediction of Florida Alliance or Loyalists being the best ones.
I think there is something to be said about some of the Texas and California and some of the Southern restaurants. There's yeah. some chains that I'm not that familiar with. So yeah. just out of like yeah. my allegiance yeah. to the things I know, yeah. which is really how these divisions are set, is yeah. that you say, I like where I am. I'm just going to stay there.
I've been going to Del Taco for years, and if Nevada thinks they can knock on our door and take that from me over my dead body, don't tread on me, is what I say about fast food. No, like Del Taco, Jack in the Box, those like In-N-Out, California's got the ones that are all novelties because they're not widespread, and that I think that does attract me in some way, but what can you do? I think California as a state in general is just a state of novelties, whether it's celebrities, people who look good, fast food joints, and just general ridiculousness. They just got things that no other state has, and that's something that draws people into California every year. And you know what? That's why we might be recording our next episode from LA.
Now before we head to that front line, let's you and I do some nimble news.
Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, beep. That's the new theme I've drawn up.
Nimble News.
Nimble News is the part of the show where we review all things new as quickly as we can do. That means new music, TV series, purchases, all kinds of experiences, even new food or movies that there just isn't time for in our main discussion. Kevin, start me off.
Nathan, I want to have a serious discussion about something I think we need to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I ventured out of my usual comfort zone and tried something new. And the science that goes into it and how it works and tastes like it does are beyond, I think, human comprehension. This has to have been dropped off by aliens because there's just no way a human could do what this item does to your taste buds. Nathan, I tried Doritos Late Night Flavor Sizzling Cheeseburger.
Kevin, I saw this at the grocery store today.
Did you buy it?
No, but I thought one of us has to eat this.
Let me be clear. I had the same experience, and I thought, I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to eat it. And I did. And then I had about two chips, and I thought, I need to take a step back and make sure I'm not losing my fucking mind and try this with other people. So I brought it to a friend's surprise birthday party. It was like a gang of eight guys in a cabin. And I literally were all sitting around at one point in the night, and I said, hold on, everyone, wait. Close your eyes. I'm going to give you one Dorito. And I want you to tell me what this tastes like. I went around. I gave them each a chip. All ate it together. Almost every person right away said the same thing that this makes me think of right away.
Do you want me to try it or are you just going to tell me?
If I had one left.
Okay, they're gone.
I would give one to you. Okay. These men mauled that bag. It tastes so exactly like a great cheeseburger cooked on a dirty grill with fresh vegetables. It is like an everlasting gobstopper in how these flavors roll over your tongue. You get the bun, you get the ketchup, you get the onion, you get the mustard, you get the pickles, you get the meat at the end. It makes no sense how this exists and how astounding it is. But let me tell you, every single Whopper I've ever gotten from Burger King tastes like it was cooked on kind of a dirty grill, but those veggies bring it back. If you were to put that chip in my mouth and I couldn't feel the texture somehow, you had numbed my mouth, I would be like, I'm eating a Whopper right now. Because it tastes exactly like it.
Wow.
I don't know what they're doing over at Doritos HQ. I don't know if it goes against God and man, but it seems like they've taken a step too far. They're doing too much. This is too accurate, and it's alarming, and I don't think they should sell them in stores anymore. It's unnatural. It's so, by definition, so unnatural. But one of these chips takes you through the entire experience of taking a bite of a Whopper cooked on a dirty grill and chewing it in your mouth and getting all those flavors washing over your tongue. They make no sense. I highly recommend everyone picks up a bag immediately. Eat one chip, throw the rest out, because I'm sure they're riddled with cancer-causing agents. I don't know. But it was such an experience that I felt the need to make it an experience for other people. Like, it is... I can't wait for you to try one. I hope I'm there. And I can't believe I didn't order some more for you to try tonight. But I think it would have derailed the episode, and that's all we would have talked about. So Doritos Late Night Sizzling Cheeseburger. You need to try it, because you're never... This will never happen again, I don't think, in human history.
I am always game for a heretical snack. I need to get some of those rolling.
I'm tempted to run to the corner store and grab a bag right now.
Kevin, a few years back, you and I loved this documentary called Some Kind of Heaven.
Oh, my God.
Which centered on a handful of residents at The Villages, the self-contained retirement community in Florida. What made that movie so unique was that, as fascinating as that place is, that little world within a world, the movie wasn't your standard investigative documentary. It was a character study. It was about a few people for whom the whole experience was not going as they hoped it would. Mm-hmm. And stylistically, the movie was as artfully made as any narrative film. I remember talking about how the director, Lance Oppenheim, instantly earned a spot on our list of filmmakers who will watch whatever they do next,
yeah,
no matter what.
Yep.
Well, his second film just dropped on Hulu.
Ooh.
And he has outdone himself.
Is he the one who did Sperm World?
It is called Sperm World.
No fucking way is that the same guy.
And it centers on the unregulated, completely unregulated online world of sperm donation.
Mm.
Like Facebook groups,
mm-hmm,
exchanging sperm. Again, this movie is not an expose. I wouldn't even call it very informational. It's a glimpse into this subculture through the eyes of a few people who became involved in it for very different reasons. Typically, women become involved due to their financial situation, and men become involved for reasons that are very complex.
Yeah. I want to have 6,000 children.
Yeah. Much like his last film, the director presents this setting and these people in a way that is, it's almost dreamlike. It feels otherworldly. And these people and these scenarios, they're more intriguing than any fiction could be. Like, if someone wrote a story about people exchanging a cup of semen in a Macy's parking lot after the dude jacked off in his car.
You've read my fanfic?
You'd read that and be like, this is not real. Who would participate in this process? But it turns out a fair amount of people would and do.
Yeah.
This is such an interesting, one-of-a-kind documentary. I recommend it so highly. Sperm World. It's now streaming on Hulu, along with Some Kind of Heaven, the director's last film, also on Hulu.
Watch that.
Check them both out. His next project is a three-part series coming out on Max in a few months. It's called Ren Faire. It's about the Texas Renaissance Festival.
Hell yeah.
And I have no doubt it will also be bizarrely fascinating, maybe involving less sperm, maybe not.
It's Texas. I'm very excited to watch Sperm World. I'm over the moon excited about a Ren Faire movie from that man, because it's going to be incredible. Great. I can't wait. As a man who recently got a vasectomy, I thought about how much money I was missing out on, and I can't wait to find out. Because genetically, I mean, this is worth a lot. This is worth a lot.
You're like a cheeseburger and a chip.
Oh, my God. I couldn't do it that well. I'll tell you that much. This just in, Kentucky Loyalist forces falling back to Illinois and Indiana after Tennessee and Louisiana have overrun the Kentucky border. The Florida Alliance throwing full-size apple pies against Kentucky's minuscule pie poppers didn't stand a chance. Kentucky forfeits the apple pie showdown by default. Hopefully no further lives will be lost, but as we all know, in Civil War, we all get a different slice of pie.
KFC canceled our delivery order.
Cowards.
And
cowards.
There's now only Popeye's apple pie on its way. I want to apologize to
Kentucky.
Those, yeah.
Mostly.
For being represented by such spineless leadership.
Ugh.
The Colonel,
to run out of an apple pie on Sunday? American Gods Day?
On our... Okay. I just have to say. On our last episode, we declared that we were done with KFC for a while.
They might have heard. That might be why they refused to deliver to this address anymore. They might have heard that. They said, and those motherfuckers.
The football yanked away yet again.
God.
How long are they banned for? The rest of the year?
That's a big ban.
No KFC in 2024.
Well, I mean, what if they come out with some amazing... What if they do Doritos cheeseburger breaded chicken?
This is how they win.
All right. KFC is dead to us.
What you want to do is just waltz right into Ford's Theater.
Let me tell
you. And say, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. I've got three names. I've got not much to lose. I can do that. I'm very upset about it. But you know what? I think Popeyes is going to come through and be good enough for both of them. Because they tend to do things right. I think it's a quality over quantity establishment, I consider it. But I'm sad about it. But that's war. Doesn't always go the way you plan. You got to be able to adapt. And as two leaders, I'm glad that we are this mobile and able to adjust and just keep fighting the good fight for the loyalist states of the United States of America.
We're so flexible, only eating one apple pie.
That's right. And declaring it the winner by default. What can you do? You live and you learn. We'll do neither tonight.
Now back to Nimble News.
Nathan, after the Doritos chips, I thought, I've got to be due for something bad in my fast food, shitty food kind of life. And there was a new item. Saw a lot of advertisements for it during March Madness. I thought, I got to get to Taco Bell. I got to try this. They've come up with a whole new kind of cantina menu that's supposed to be a little fresher, a little healthier, I think, is kind of the angle they're going for. I used to love what was called their Power Burrito, which was like a high protein, low fat-ish for Taco Bell type of item. And I thought, wow, their new Cantina Chicken Burrito with avocado verde salsa sounds like it could be right up my alley. Could fill that gap in my heart. Mm-hmm. Literally and figuratively. So I went there after a workout, of course, to get my protein. I pull the burrito out, driving down the road with my knees. I grab the avocado verde salsa, rip it open with my hand. I've got the burrito in one hand, the sauce in another, while operating a full-size motor vehicle. And I put a little sauce on, and I take one bite. And let me tell you, this is by far the best thing Taco Bell has done in decades.
You went flying into the ditch.
I crashed right away. I safely pulled over, turned my hazards on, and I was safe. And I said, I need time to process this. How can I be expected to drive with each bite of this? It is so delicious. It's got these fresh vegetables in there that keep it, you know, light and juicy and delicious and crunchy. It's not super cheese heavy or anything like that, so that's great for me. It smells incredible. It smells like you are at a, like, open air. They're just doing veggies and chicken on a grill, a flat top grill, and they're just throwing it into a tortilla and then chucking it into your mouth. But honestly, the avocado verde salsa is so phenomenal. It's got this delicious bite. It's a little bit of heat. It's just so sharp and delicious, and it pairs so nicely with it. I use the whole packet every time. I've had like six of these now. I can't stop. They are so delicious. I have not tried any of the other new Cantina chicken things, but if they're halfway as good as a burrito, it is the only fast food restaurant I'll be going to for like the next year and a half. I can't recommend it enough. Taco Bell's new Cantina chicken burrito with the avocado verde salsa. It is a flavor sensation. It is so fresh for fast food. It's just delicious. And it's not terrible for you, which is something we can rarely say on the show.
I feel like my meals this week are set. You're just going day by day and saying, yeah, eat this Monday, eat this Tuesday.
Let's go.
On that note, Kevin, those rascals at the International House of Pancakes are at it again.
I thought it was IHOB. Not anymore?
I don't know how they... What's the legality there? Like choose one.
I don't think they ever legally changed it, but who knows?
Before I tell you what they've concocted this time, let me paint a picture.
No.
The story started as it often does. I saw a post on our beloved ChewBoom.com about an irresistible new item. And I answered the call. I decided to place a pickup order at IHOP, but this item wasn't listed as an option online. So I figured I'd just pop in and ask. The old-fashioned way. I'm in the neighborhood, you know. At 8 p.m. on a Tuesday,
prime time for IHOP.
I walked into an empty IHOP. No customers, one employee. And I asked him if they had the thing. He said, yeah. So I said, I'll just take that. He started to walk back to the kitchen. He stopped, turns around. He goes, you just want that? I said, yeah. He comes back with it a minute later. I have my wallet out, ready to pay for my to-go order. He goes, it's on the house.
I'm so excited to know what this is.
And I'm thinking, I'm looking around. This might have been the only revenue all night.
This seems honestly like an absolute nightmare that I would have. Like walking into an empty IHOP, them giving it to me for free, and then it immediately killing me or something. Like this is straight out of my nightmare.
I thanked him dearly, and I walked out of the door holding a cup of IHOP's exclusive maple syrup Pepsi.
Oh my fucking god. Oh my god. What? Why? There's so much good work going on in the fast food industry. Why are they adding syrup? Okay. Syrup Pepsi. Yep.
So, yeah. Pretty self-explanatory what this is.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I was expecting some new version of Pepsi that was created in the lab to emulate the flavor of syrup, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's all sorts of sodas that are like that. Some crazy chemical mixture. I'm pretty sure IHOP is literally just pouring their syrup into regular Pepsi.
Ugh.
I'm not kidding. Because not only does it taste exactly like that, but the way it feels in your mouth, every sip coats your tongue. Like, syrup is filling all the nooks and crannies between your taste buds, while Pepsi washes over all of that silky sludge. It is disgusting, and most of it went in the trash. And it still managed to give me a stomachache. So, IHOP's maple syrup Pepsi, not even worth $0.
Did you, when you tried to order it for pickup, did you just order that?
I was going to, but it wasn't listed online.
You couldn't order it online.
I couldn't. I had to go and ask.
I see. Okay. Wow. That, you don't have to get everything that's on Chewboom. I just want to let you know that. You and I have
done a good job of divvying up
the
healthy, creative, delicious treats and the abominations.
We each take a bullet every now and then, and that's how we operate. Nathan, somewhere between 5 to 10 years ago, you gave me a homework handoff for Martin Scorsese's Age of Innocence.
Yeah.
I want to report that I watched this about 3 episodes ago, but I keep forgetting to tell you that I did. Because mainly, I think, because I have not figured out what my next homework handoff to you is going to be.
Yeah.
And there's so many options. And I know you're going to try that Doritos cheeseburger chip on your own, so it's not going to be that for sure. But I watched Age of Innocence. This is a movie that came out, I don't have the info pulled up, but
93. My year.
I was a fresh, you were basically a fetus for half the year.
That's right.
And, then you were a living being for
the
other half.
And some would say that was my Age of Innocence.
some would say after that it was not so innocent. 93, Martin Scorsese, rated PG, which caught me off guard.
Is it?
Yeah. Huh. I thought, that's got to be the only Scorsese movie rated PG.
Yeah.
Probably. Other than The Lorax? I just wanted to throw you a wrench there. But I watched this movie.
He actually plays the titular Lorax.
He is the Lorax. God, he would crush in that role, actually. Get him in like an orange Carhartt, he's crushing. I knew, you told me specifically to not look anything up about this movie. I knew it was Daniel Day-Lewis. That was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. I knew Winona Ryder, Michelle Pfeiffer. Didn't know anything about the plot or anything like that. This movie is a filmmaking treat. Like, if you enjoy how films are made, you will love just watching things unfold, because the way he does it is phenomenal. Like, the camera movements, the long shots are amazing. It's a very dynamically filmed movie. His camera's swimming through these opulent interiors, and it's like high society, over the top, like a cigar cutter on a chain on a guy's vest, like these absurd, everyone is so decked out in their just luxurious gear and accessories and things like that, whether it's a cigarette holder or a bracelet or whatever it might be. And the interiors of these houses are so fun to explore. And you feel like you're just tilting your head back and forth looking at this all unfold. The costumes are insane. The acting, Daniel Day-Lewis is astounding as per usual. Like, I absolutely loved him in this. But I think it's really the sets and the costumes and the props and the environment that you enjoy more in this movie than the performances. Because the performances are good, but because everything is framed up as just the most opulent things you can imagine, you don't care that much about the characters because you know they're going to be okay, at least in my experience. But it's just so extravagant. But I absolutely loved it. You got a little Richard E. Grant who, after Can You Ever Forgive Me, which I feel like was my first like main exposure to him, I'm seeing him in so many old movies that I'm watching. He just pops up out of nowhere. And I love the guy. He just seems so happy. But this was like Goodfellas meets Little Women, I think, right in the middle, that little sweet spot right there. It was absolutely not what I expected because I expected Scorsese and, you know, I knew it was Scorsese. I knew the time frame it took place and I thought it would be a lot grittier and like more cutthroat and have more consequences, I think, for the people in the movie. But it's very much just kind of watching their lives unfold and seeing how they kind of navigate these minor inconveniences to each other. And it's just wild. I mean, the high society angle of it is just fascinating to watch because you watch these Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, go to bat for his lady or lady he doesn't want people to know is his lady, and you know, fighting for a woman even though he doesn't have to, and still giving her a foot massage at the end of the day. Like, it's so funny to watch how high society operated back then and think of like, God, we still have so many carryovers from that era that are just pointless and dumb in the way we do things. But it's just pure opulence. It's well acted. It's phenomenally shot and very well put together. And it was a real treat.
I'm so happy to hear that you got everything out of it that I wanted you to. Because it's not, I love everything about it, but it's not just how good it is that makes me want to recommend it. It's, I don't know why people don't talk about this more.
Yeah.
Because it's like a stuffy period piece.
Yep.
But Scorsese, like it's this, a style. I've never seen a movie like it.
No.
To capture that world in that way. The man literally did Goodfellas in 90, Cape Fear in 91, and then The Age of Innocence in 93. How?
How does
one person do this?
It blows my mind. It blows my mind.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was just very unexpected. I, again, have no idea how it was not on my radar at all. Like, you told me that, and I was like, I've heard of it. I didn't know it was Scorsese. What a treat, though. Real treat. So
you're giving me a treat.
In return, I am going to give you a treat. It's Broken Lizards. No, I'm just kidding.
Jesus Christ.
My treat for you, Nathan, I have.
Kevin, before you even say another word, you're giving me one thing.
Yeah, I'm giving you one thing.
Okay.
What I was about to say is I have countless options.
I know.
Countless.
And the funnel.
I'm going to funnel it out. Here's what I'm going to give to you. You've never watched a Studio Ghibli movie.
That is correct.
Okay. This is a blind spot for you.
Yeah.
I want you to have an experience that was similar to mine, my first exposure to Studio Ghibli movies. I would like to watch it with you, if we can swing that. But
we'll have to check our next few
people.
Months.
We're both busy people. It might not happen.
Prefer not to hang out off mic.
I agree. Save it for the pod. But I do know that a local theater also plays a lot of these relatively regularly. Yeah. It's the first Studio Ghibli movie I ever saw. It's the one that really opened me up to that genre of film and made me realize how powerful it can be. It's got a voice cast that I demand you not look up, and you're going to be just every 15 minutes throughout this movie saying, oh my God, that's XYZ.
Can I stop you there? I've already seen The Lorax.
It's not Scorsese's best movie, The Lorax. It is Howl's Moving Castle. I know there's, you know, Spirited Away won Best Picture. I know there's probably more powerful ones. There's more fun, friendly ones like Ponyo or My Neighbor Totoro. But Howl's Moving Castle is my first taste, and it really is a movie that I love to this day for reasons you'll find out. Okay. And I can't wait to hear back what you think about it. And again, I'm going to be standing outside your window waiting for you to turn it on. If I see you hit play, I'm coming through.
I'm excited to be forced to do something that I should have done years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm really good at doing with people.
Kevin, I'm sure you and many of our listeners are familiar with the phenomenon of twin movies, where two movies with very similar plots come out around the same time. The most famous examples are movies like A Bug's Life and ants. Oh, I think you're an ants guy.
I don't know what? I don't hate ants, but whenever I think of this scenario, I think of The Prestige and The Illusionist.
Yes.
100% every time.
Deep Impact and Armageddon is another one.
Yeah.
Lots of examples. Sometimes the similarities between the two are just a coincidence, but more often than not, it's because an idea was pitched around Hollywood, got picked up by multiple studios, or sometimes even one studio gets word of a project in development at another studio. They rush to make their own version first. Mm-hmm. But regardless, what the public sees is just two really similar movies. Oftentimes, one of the two will be regarded more highly, while the other is seen more so as the copycat.
Yeah.
Typically, just whichever comes out second is seen as the copycat, which is why studios rush to be the first. In the last month or so, we've gotten the strangest example of twin movies in recent memory. It's two horror movies. Oh. Immaculate, yeah. Starring Sydney Sweeney. And The First Omen, which is a prequel to The Omen from 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so eerie, these two movies, because the premise of both is an American nun travels to a convent in Italy and some real freaky shit starts happening. That alone qualifies these as twin movies. It's weirdly identical setups for two movies that came out a month apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But as the plots unfold, the similarities just pile up scene after scene and twist after twist to the point that it's like, on one hand, the screenplays are so alike that in a weird way, it almost seems like the similarities have to be coincidental, because I cannot imagine any legitimate screenwriter just blatantly ripping off someone else's work this closely. But on the other hand, the few ways in which their storylines differ, they're not just different, they're like the exact inverse of one another.
Hmm.
I won't go into the spoilers, but it almost feels like either one of them could have been written in response to the other one. But they came out at the same time. Hmm. It's so weird. And I've listened to interviews with the filmmakers from both, and they're just like, I mean, obviously they're not going to cop to like, yeah, we copied the other movie. But it really sounds like they both came from a place of genuine inspiration. And when you see the movies, you'll get why the state of the world could inspire these stories. But anyways, my verdict on these two movies is, Immaculate, I enjoyed. It takes a while to get going, but by the end, Sydney Sweeney really wowed me. The last 10 minutes in particular makes the whole thing worth watching.
Hmm.
But The First Omen is amazing. It is my favorite pure horror movie in years. Probably since like The Invisible Man, which was 4 years ago now.
Wow.
It has the tone, the feel of a 70s psychological horror movie, kind of like the original. It's got that feeling of dread mounting slowly, but it is as visceral and deeply scary as any of the best modern horror. Even if you're not into scary movies, I'm telling you, the filmmaking is 100% worth checking out. The director, Arkasha Stevenson, it is her first feature film, which shocked me when I learned it, because it is such an accomplished execution of this very bold vision. Like, you know when a moment in a movie makes you just go, I've never seen that brought to the screen in that way before? Yeah. There was like 12 of those moments in The First Omen.
Wow.
One of them apparently earned the movie an NC-17 rating at first, and they just had to fight to keep it in. And it is quite something.
Wow.
If you're squeamish, I would say maybe just stick to Immaculate, but if you're up to the challenge, The First Omen is really great stuff.
Hmm.
And if you're just feeling sacrilegious, watch them both back to back. You'll have a great time.
Wow. I've seen neither of these movies, but my dad and grandpa found themselves in an Immaculate screening because they went to a movie theater. They said, what's on the screens? And the person behind the counter said, you two would probably love Immaculate, you 60 and 80 something year old men. And they went in and they didn't love it. But I'm going to recommend The First Omen to them, because I think that might be more up their alley. Higher quality, it sounds like. I'm excited to watch The First Omen. I've been hearing crazy good things about it, and it always surprises me when a movie like that gets good press from people who don't normally give good press out. So it's got to be good.
I think it's kind of getting lost in the shuffle because of the similarity. It didn't do that well at the box office, which is really rare for a horror movie that has good word of mouth.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are just like, it's like that one.
Just saw a nun movie.
It's a real shame. If they had come out in the opposite order,
mm-hmm.
I think Immaculate would have been like completely ignored. Yeah. Maybe not because it has a bigger star. I don't know.
Sweeney's but it's got some pull. Yeah.
But all that to say, they're both worth watching.
All right. You told me to watch. Well, you told me to watch Immaculate. You told me to watch First Omen, but I've watched neither. So sorry.
That does sound like me, and it sounds like you.
Yeah. Agreed. Nathan, I've got one more if you don't mind me sneaking one in. Nathan, I went to a theater, God, probably 2-3 months ago to see a movie from a filmmaker who I love. And I was excited. It's a short 80 to 90 minute movie. I thought, this seems extremely up my alley, and I'm going to love it. And it's going to be great. It's going to be weird. It's going to be dry. It's going to be funny. It's going to be a good time. I went to see Drive Away Dolls. Yeah. Ethan Coen's latest movie. Have you seen it?
I've actually not.
Hmm.
Heard some tepid reactions, to say the least.
Tepid is honestly probably the perfect word for this movie. Ethan needs his brother, I would say.
They should have just called it that.
In a big way. The writing just... It stars Margaret Qualley, Beanie Feldstein, Geraldine, it's hard for me to not say Viswanathan. Geraldine Viswanathan?
Visible Kevin?
Pedro Pascal. Miley Cyrus is in it. Matt Damon's in it. Colin Domingo's in it.
Wait, what?
Yes. I'm telling you, every turn in this movie is somebody you recognize from another movie or something else. But Miley Cyrus is literally just in these psychedelic visions that one character has. I don't know how I feel about this movie because it starts off and I thought, holy shit, I hate the two main characters. They're both doing accents that, well, mainly Margaret Qualley's accent is very hard to buy into. It's a very thick accent, and you're like, oh, you're really putting that on. It doesn't give you a lot of reason to be invested with any of the characters. Pedro Pascal dies in like the first 2 minutes, and he was like a headliner in the trailer. So it's like, okay, yeah, you knew you didn't have enough here to keep us pegged to the screen. But it's not bad. It's not bad. It's well shot. It's incredibly well put together. It's just, I think the writing just does not have like a realistic tilt to it. It doesn't have any reason for you to be invested in what's happening. And it's just like the whole time you're kind of like, can I like go grab a hot dog or something? Like you just, it's not, it doesn't pull you in. It just started streaming, I think, in the last couple of weeks, but on like Peacock or Paramount Plus, one of the ones that nobody pays for. So nobody's going to watch it even more. I do think that people should watch this movie. I would love to hear your thoughts on this movie. And this was potentially one of my homework handoffs, but I wanted to give you something that's actually good. It's not bad. And there's moments where you're like, holy shit, this is hilarious and this is great. And mainly those are the moments where it's almost like a buddy cop comedy with two kind of enforcers. But it's fine. And I think... fine movies still deserve love. So Drive Away Dolls is fine. It's 80 minutes of your life. And I would recommend probably some pot or a gummy beforehand because that's really the optimal way to consume this. I wish I could have indulged before I did. I went in sober as a bird and left with a crippling addiction to something. I just needed to find the first thing I could get my hands on. To make me feel alive again, because this movie really just made me feel nothing, which is so sad because the Coen brothers are so good at making me feel things typically. So Drive Away Dolls, not going to be on my top 10 this year.
If someone had told me 5 years ago that a Coen brother movie would come out, and not only would I miss it in theaters, but I would just like keep putting it off month after month, I'd be like, you're an idiot. I'm there day one.
That's why I went to see it.
I've not heard anything about it that makes me even just want to press play.
It's just so... The thing is, you see bits from their other movies. Like, right. You see the Fargo bits. You see... You just see so much promise in these few scenes, and they build up, and you're like, oh my God, it's going to get to that level. And it just is like... It's basically just Coen brother edging for 80 minutes. Like, you're just so close to what they normally can do. And it's sad. It's sad. I've recommended it to a couple people because I think some people will really appreciate it, but it's, it just fell short and it made me sad. Never meet your heroes, as they say. Speaking of the movie Men.
Speaking of being disappointed by your heroes, as in the Colonel.
Yeah.
Let's dig into that Popeye's cinnamon apple pie and no KFC apple pie poppers.
Do you maintain your title of the colonel if you surrender, or are you forced out of
That's
the military?
A great question.
Because we're going to have to write some letters.
I don't think he can call himself that.
I don't think he can anymore. No. Now he's just the artist formerly known as the colonel.
So, Kevin, you've opened the bag. So we're in a situation here, and this might end up being okay.
Are these mines? Should I not be holding these?
We may.
This seems like a trap.
Kevin reached in the bag, pulled out two flat, items and wrappers, and there's a sticker on each that says
a honey barbecue. But let me make it clear. I've never been more certain in my life that what's in here is an apple pie or a Hot Pocket, because it's got the cardboard containers that have basically oval ends that you tuck in. I know this is an apple pie, but why they use the honey barbecue stickers, I don't know.
So we've given these apple pies a little heat just to give them their fair shot because, I mean, they showed up, which is something.
We put them in the neutron accelerator. Wow, I dumped mine upside down, and the amount of cinnamon sugar that fell off is alarming.
Describe what's in front of your eyes. So it came in the little cardboard.
That's a classic pie pouch.
And they made theirs cute. They have little illustrations of, like, instruments and stuff. Like, it looks very Louisiana-themed.
Louisiana stuff.
Out came this pie.
There's no slots for the filling to come through, which I find interesting, because even McDonald's does that. So it's a fully sealed pie pocket, about the size of, if you were to take a domino and about 2 times it surface area-wise, and then raise it double as well for height, you'd be about at 1.75% of this.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I'd give it about 4 inches wide by 1.5 inches. I mean, you
know what I'm saying. It's a generous four, but I know you're a big fan of a generous four, so that's fine.
Lots of cinnamon sugar on
yours top. Yours has some weird lumps. Mine's much more uniform.
Yeah, look at this horizontally.
Yours is like a two-hump camel. Mine's like a camel laying on its side.
Cheers.
Let's go.
What's your read of this?
Overall, I'd say a little bland. Needs probably more filling. I don't know.
I think the texture is pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
And it literally just needs more spice on the inside.
Yeah, yeah. The filling is bland. But the outside crust is really nicely crispy and crunchy. The inside's ooey-gooey goodness. But the flavors just aren't there. You need some more flavorful apples, and you need, I don't know what else. It's fine.
Popeyes has never really let me down in terms of flavor. You know, usually they're pretty reliable.
Yeah.
But this is...
It's okay.
Yeah. I would say it's not going to win the war, but they have won the war.
Yeah, they've already won. They've already won. When your enemy runs away. Because you look like a delicious full-size pie. But really, they don't know that you're just empty on the inside. In terms of flavor, there is goo inside. Uh-oh. Nathan sprung a leak out the back.
Now, 3 bites in.
I did 2, actually. It got on my finger.
Oh, God. The back end split wide open. And a chunk of apple came pouring out. And now, the long side has split wide open. Yeah. I have a...
You have now a taco.
A fully...
Apple pie taco.
Bisected apple pie.
Yeah.
And, this is going to be quite hard to finish.
Yeah, mine oozed out at the back and kind of burned my finger a little bit, but that's on me for my microwave timing. That's not on Popeyes. If the most exciting part about your apple pie is where the goo might fall out, it's probably not a great sign. I'm very sad about that. You know what? KFC, had they shown up, probably would have put up a good fight against that. So I imagine when you have smaller pops or bites, you're probably going to make that filling a little more flavorful. So I imagine one of those would have gone a long way. But
or maybe, as we mentioned earlier, that the more surface area just means that maybe the crust is just easier to get right. Yeah. Therefore, more surface area would just be a more enjoyable bite rather than this, which a lot more of your bite is the goo.
Yeah. But you can see... The goo, I'm looking at the goo that spilled out of Nathan's thing. Normally when you bite an apple pie, the goo's not that translucent.
It's very gooey.
It's very just filling. It's filler goo. It's not flavor goo.
Something tells me this might just be pure high fructose corn syrup.
It literally looks like that. It truly looks like somebody aged some apples in high fructose corn syrup. Wow. I think Nathan might not be finishing his apple pie.
So we did order an additional dessert to have as our spoiler snack tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. Having two desserts slows you down?
It's not that I can't eat this. It's that I...
choose not to.
Because I have this next thing to enjoy, I think I'm okay just kind of putting this on ice.
That's on you. You're going to be the one that has to sleep tonight, knowing that.
After this sugar, I won't.
Yeah, that's actually fair. That's fair.
The fact that this Popeye's apple pie is our de facto winner, it's more disappointing than if we had just had a normal episode and had a bad food. I was really excited about eating two great things, and we had one
mediocre thing. Yeah, that's life. That's the podcast world. You know, you can't have it all. We already have a podcast.
What would you tell people? Like, what would your warning be about all of this?
Don't trust the Colonel. He's a coward.
But would you trust Popeye?
I'd trust him to show up. If I need someone to, you know, back me up, I know he's going to be there. I don't know if he's not going to throw a knockout punch, that's for sure, but he's going to show up. He's going to do his damnedest. And the Colonel's probably off doing God knows what. Probably involves gravy, who knows? But I don't know what he's doing. He's not here. He's not there for me. And he wasn't tonight. And that's why Kentucky's no longer a state.
So, that brings me to Civil War. Kirsten Dunst's character, she plays a photojournalist. There's this line early in the movie where she's talking to her colleagues, these other war photographers, and she's contemplating the futility of her work.
Yeah.
She says something like, I used to think my photos were a warning to others of what not to do, but here we are.
She also says, I've never photographed the colonel because he's never shown up on the front lines.
My question to you about this movie is simple, Kevin. Maybe not simple. I don't know. Do you think that this film is intended to serve as a warning? And if so, did you find it to be an effective warning or a futile effort?
I don't at all think it's meant to serve as a warning. And I thought going into this, because me and you are very good at avoiding trailers, I had no idea what this was really about. I didn't know that it was going to be about a war photographer or, you know, journalists in general. All I knew about this movie was that America's in a civil war. And I thought it was going to be a very political movie. I thought it was going to be a very violent movie, which it is at times. But I thought this was going to be a very different movie than the movie that I saw. And I think this movie, more than anything, like, I thought it would be political. I thought it would be a warning of, like, this is what could happen. But I think this movie frames up almost all sides on this civil war as the same. They're just people fighting because they believe in what they believe in, and they're fighting people who don't agree with them. And that is kind of the sum of all the different factions in this, is they're just killing people they don't agree with. And that's how war's been our entire life. That's why war exists. That's why people die in countless numbers for stupid shit throughout world history. And this, I think, is much more an ode to journalism, an ode to war photography, an ode to people willing to risk their lives to show people what's actually happening than it was like a political statement. So I walked out very surprised. I don't know if I would say like let, I don't think I was let down, but it was just not at all what I expected. And I don't think it has a very heavy political message or a very heavy warning system. Like, to record an episode today where, like, major steps have been taken towards World War III, you think, too, like, oh, you know, civil war could happen, or, you know, another world war could happen. And it's like, yeah, is that news to me? I don't think so. Like, the world's a fucking nightmare, and shitty people are always going to do shitty things. And it's like, this movie just kind of almost says, like, matter-of-factly, like, there's always going to be people killing other people for not agreeing with what they believe in. And I think the important thing is that people are there to document it and show how brutal and ugly war can be and how terrible these situations can be. But yeah, overall, this, I don't know. It wasn't a warning to me. It didn't seem very political. It's just kind of like a, almost like a documentary of like, hey, here's 3 days with this group of people and what they experienced. Like, how do you think you'd hold up against that? Is kind of how I walked out of there. And I don't know. Did it surprise you with what it covered as much as it surprised me, or did you know more about it?
No, I went in totally blind, and I was very, very surprised. And I don't think the way that it subverts those expectations, I don't think is inherently a good or a bad thing.
Like, I agree.
It was an interesting take. Like, it was definitely not. I'm sure there's lots of criticism out there of people who are like, "What the hell? This isn't a movie about civil war. It's about like being on the edges of civil war." Mm-hmm. I don't care. That's not how I think. I don't have that criticism.
Yeah.
I'll preface my thoughts by saying two things. Based on Alex Garland's work and what I've heard from him in interviews, I would imagine that you and I probably agree with more of his political and philosophical views than we disagree with.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that this movie will get criticism from people who are like, this Hollywood liberal doesn't know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously, for anyone listening who's not familiar with us and our show, that's not the perspective we're coming at this from. Yeah. Like, in case that needs to be said, I would also say I go into every movie just wanting to love it.
Yeah.
Even if I realize midway through that it's not as good as I hoped it would be,
mm-hmm.
I really try to latch on to what I do enjoy. Like, even if the plot's not doing it for me or the dialogue's bad, I can still be like, all right, the music's great, the costumes are awesome, the visuals, whatever.
Yep.
I thought this movie was thoroughly pointless.
Yeah.
Completely devoid of any value. And I can already hear. So when I know we're going to review a movie, I really try, between the time that I watch it and when we record, I try not to consume other people's opinions because I really want to not let that seep into my own thoughts before I express what I'm thinking. And I'm sure that there are people out there, I already know there's people out there, who would respond to me and say, the pointlessness is the point.
No, it's not. To anyone who says that, fuck you, fight me, don't fight Nathan. But that's not the point of this movie.
There's part of me that wonders if, like,
no,
the, and we're going to have to wait to spoilers to get into really the major moments of the film, but there's parts where I'm like, is the point of this movie that what we're watching on screen is just as futile as what these people are taking pictures of? If that's the point, if the pointlessness is the point, then congratulations to them for making a worthless
that's
movie.
That's a very creative way to frame it up, and there's just no possible way that that's what he was going for. There's no, because this is a filmmaker who takes stabs.
Right, which is why I can't wrap my mind around what a stabless movie this is. I feel like there's no stab.
Okay, so I think first I want to talk about Alex Garland in general before we dive into why this movie missed with you. I think it might have missed less significantly with me, but either way, me and you are big Alex Garland fans. I think before, let's say, T-minus 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's had 4 movies. First is great.
Yeah.
Second is one of my favorite movies in the last decade. Ex Machina is great. Annihilation,
you love. I adore. You made me watch.
Men, I think, is quite poor.
Men is a terrible movie.
And I think that this is like, and there's talk about him going on hiatus from directing. If this is what he goes out
he's not going to do that.
Dear God.
He already said that was misconstrued. He's already signed up for another movie about, I don't even want to tell you. We'll talk about it later. But we had recently just watched Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you went to the theater to see it. I watched it at home so I can make it to the theater. And it gave me, because after Men, I was like, I don't trust this filmmaker anymore. That movie was such a letdown to me. I said, I don't trust him anymore. And then I watched Ex Machina again, and I go, how do I not trust this guy? He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's a master. This movie's almost perfect. Like, I love that movie so much. How it subverts expectations, everything. So I went into this movie thinking, what a fucking amazing topic. What a fun angle to come at it from. Like, a futuristic civil war. Like, he's going to get so creative and get so weird, and it's going to be fantastic. And it's just not enough. Like, this whole movie should be the first 25 minutes of another movie. This whole movie could be the first 25 minutes. Like, after, again, we'll talk about it in spoilers. The end of this movie, you think, that's where you start to think, like, what happens next? Now I'm invested. Now I want to know what happens next. You've shown me the same stuff for an hour and a half. You just progressed the plot, and now we have to leave? Now we're done? And it is so unsatisfying. Walking out of this theater, I was so unsatisfied. But it's more like a you know, fly on the wall type take on an event that should be covered in a much more exciting way. And like you said, that could be him commenting on more photography than the people who do it, but it just doesn't seem, I don't know, it doesn't seem like that could be possibly the way he wanted it to be taken.
All right, so the fly on the wall aspect, like, these photographers, they're following along horrific things they're seeing, and they literally only care about getting the beautiful shot, because, I mean, that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're getting the beautiful shot. To the point of what I think is, like, borderline satire by the end.
Yeah.
What they do to get the perfect shot, I think is actually supposed to be a joke.
I don't know if it is. I don't know if it is.
Don't you think the ending, what someone does near the very end, is, like, a literal punchline?
We have to get to spoilers.
I know we're going to get there, but, like, but I just...
There's many points where you think that could be a punchline, I think, in this movie. And you don't go there because you hold out a hope that, like, these are serious people and you want them to be...
I think
the last bit weirds you out. There's so many bits earlier on where you should have been like, absolutely not. Like, they're not going to be going through, you know, shoulder to shoulder with troops, like, literally, like, doing their fucking signs of, like, hey, cover here, yeah, like, go here. It's
not just that it's unrealistic, because it does reach a point where, like, someone does something in this movie that no human would actually do. I get that it's, like, it's operating on a different level than just reality. It is the, like, you called it an ode to photojournalism. I felt like the whole way we're just, I feel like it almost has, like, not, like, disdain, but is showing these people's
futility. Like,
what they care about and what they feel to be so crucial is actually changing literally nothing.
Yeah, in this movie we see it change nothing, but I do think they do a really good job of showing the pictures they take. And I think an important part of while you're viewing this film is they do a lot of, like, you're in a very chaotic scene and then it goes kish and you see the picture that they took.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I think those pictures are what you need to register as, God, if I just, you know, I'm not on the ground. I don't know what's happening on the front against the Western forces. And if I saw that picture, I would have this meaning behind it. I would feel this way about the battle. I would feel this way about the people in it. And I think if you don't approach it in the way of, like, a consumer of news or of media like that, it's very easy to say, like, what they're doing is futile. But if you were to just to, honestly, I would love to see it. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Just the still shots that they took as they were going through all these things. And if you were to just put that in and say, hey, America's in civil war, here's, like, a picture of what's going on, it would be so impactful. Because some of those shots are astounding. Now, how realistic it is that they would get these shots, that's a whole other conversation. But I think he does do a good job of showing the value of the stuff they're doing. But it's just like, could they actually be embedded, so embedded in these situations to get these shots? It's hard to say. But, like, I think one of the most impactful scenes is Kirsten Dunst. She has, like, a flashback to previous wars she's covered as a war photographer, and you see those shots. And I think we're much more used to seeing shots like those of wars outside of the U.S., of wars with people who look different than us.
Yeah.
And it's those where you're like, oh, I know these pictures. I've seen these my whole life. And when it's, you know, Americans killing Americans, I think it honestly is probably harder for, like, our minds who've, you know, we've just been hammered with, like, propaganda and Western media, like, to be like, oh, that's real, or, like, you know, there's context there. Like, it's almost laughable at points. But I think you have to get into the mindset of, like, this is a real war in this situation, and these pictures are meaningful. So it's like, I think it does a good job of showing the value of their work. I just don't know if I buy how embedded they get with fucking strangers in, like, 5 minutes who trust them to be at their back in a fucking gunfight. Like, it seems like a stretch to me. But then there's other scenes where strangers act how I would expect strangers to act in a civil war. So, I don't know. It seems like a very discombobulated movie, and I wish it would be the start of, like, a 10-episode series instead of what it was.
those photographs, and one of the photographers has a film camera, and it's like the texture of that contrasted with the digital photography. It's beautiful.
It is.
Just like these characters' photos, this director is making something that looks beautiful. He makes great looking movies. Yeah. There's so many compositions that are just, they just stun you.
Yeah.
But I just kept thinking, why, like, in terms of the movie itself, not photos in the context, in the reality of the movie, but me watching this movie.
Yeah.
Why should this be beautiful? Other than to, I just kept feeling like this action is, it's doing all the warfare fetishization that, like, video games get criticized for.
Yeah, but that's...
How is it actually different? How are we not going to this to see that? And to see this portrayed so gorgeously, the horrors and the beauty and all of it? This is why I kept waiting for the movie to go to the next step of that idea.
Yeah.
I'm watching the whole thing thinking, I get it. What we're seeing is like what the photographers are capturing. I get that. What do we do with that? With that parallel?
Yeah.
What do we actually take away from this?
Yeah.
What insight is there to gain from that? And I don't know what it is other than just like explosions are pretty.
I think it's two things though. I think it shows you the shit that they go through to get those pictures. And I think it shows you that those pictures might not be fully representative of how it is, but you think of those iconic pictures that everyone in the fucking world knows, whether it's like the lady in the Dust Bowl or like the sailor kissing her or the sailor kissing his girlfriend or whatever it is when he gets back from duty. Like, those pictures are what frames the narrative. And that's what people remember, are iconic photographs. And that's how wars are remembered. Like, you think of World War II and 6 or 7 pictures pop in your head. And that's what, and whether they're from a history book, whether they're a soldier hugging someone when they return, it probably depends on where you grew up in the world and how you consumed media. But like, that's what defines history. And I think he's saying these people who are flawed, who, you know, don't get a perfect frame every time, like, I think they're kind of the history writers. And I think that could be an angle he's going for. I don't know. But like, I think that's what he's framing it up as, like, it's not going to be ever, nobody can capture all the horrificness of war. The most horrific scene, and I think scenes in this movie, are not captured on film by the actual war photographers because they are terrified. And I think it's showing, like, they can only take these pictures when they're somewhat safe. They can't do it when bullets are, I mean, they do it when bullets are flying, but like, when their lives are at risk, they're not going to take the photographs. They're going to be observing and trying to survive.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, I think it shows that disconnect between these photos and war, but it also shows the connection between how these photos that might be disconnected from the actual atrocities are the ones that people remember and what frame history.
But don't you think that would have been accomplished so much more effectively if what we were watching in this movie was, instead of it being like gorgeously composed helicopters flying over a burning sunset or like rockets flying over the White House and like the gorgeous... If it was actual, if it actually reflected the horrors of war, and it did not care about being beautiful, but then
it'd be unwatchable though. It'd be
and I think it would actually maybe say something then. If it was a scene that was not trying to wow you or dazzle you, but it was just like, this is fucking war and all its grit. And then amidst that, you got the snapshot of the beautiful photo. That I think would actually say something.
I think,
instead it's just like, it's all just supposed to look pretty.
I think we can both agree that this movie doesn't land well and doesn't have a clear message, and I don't think it will be remembered well overall. I think it's getting decent reviews right now,
which
I think it's because people, well, probably a good chunk of the population is just rooting for a civil war and thinks like, yeah, hell yeah, I'm not even going to see it. I'm going to give it 5 stars because I think I'd love to see the U.S. go to war. I did that accent. That's not a regional discrepancy or anything like that. But I think there's that. I think it is, if you like video games and loud war things, you're going to like it.
Which is...
It's not
so dumb.
It's not a movie that cinephiles are going to appreciate. I think it's a movie for, I mean, lack of a better term, the common man, the common person. Like, I think this movie checks a lot of boxes. It's loud. The plot moves fast. It is, you know, purposely driven. And there's things that explode and make noise and look pretty. And that checks the boxes for most, at least Americans. I think that checks the boxes of like, yeah, it was a good movie.
I think that if someone goes into this looking for just the visceral, hell yeah, war, burn everything down, I think they're also going to be pretty let down by the fact that it's like 10% that.
Yeah.
They like maybe imagine someone who's just like, I just want to watch tanks and planes and guns shoot at each other. There's that makes up maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes of the entire runtime of this movie.
Yeah.
It's mostly quite slow with these characters.
Yeah.
And
what do you think? What do you think the longest gap in this movie is between gunshots?
I mean, I would bet there's at least like some 20 minute stretches where it's just like,
I bet not.
But okay, the sound of gunfire is one thing, but like between there's three or four what are
battle scenes, we'll say.
Or just
war scenes.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think that even putting all of these criticisms aside, I think that if it was good action, I would be, that's the thing I would latch onto. I'd be like, well, I hated most of this.
Yeah.
But this is well done action.
Yeah.
I enjoy the art of action. There's a lot of dumb action movies that actually it's very difficult to pull off.
Yeah.
The tension, everything that goes into that. I don't think Alex Garland knows how to do any of that.
It's, I feel like for a movie that's supposed to be about chaotic war and violence, like the violence and the battles are heavily choreographed to their detriment.
Yes. Like here's a flyover shot of a city that's obviously just like a CGI city on fire, whatever. Like it looks decent.
Yeah.
And then cut to, here's like six soldiers walking around. I'm like, I don't have any sense that these are actually people in this place. I feel like this is the budget allowed for like these six people to do with this one thing. What pisses me off the most about this movie, there's this idea in music production that if you're making music and you want to determine if the music you're making is actually good, listen to it at a very low volume, because loud music can have all sorts of physiological effects on you. You can feel the bass in your chest, or the sensory overload can give you goosebumps or raise your heart rate. But at a low volume, all that's stripped away. And then you might realize, oh, the song isn't actually that great. It just feels good when you blast it in the car.
Yeah.
But a really good song is a really good song, no matter how loud you listen to it. I don't think really a single action moment in this movie is good. I think it's just loud.
Yeah.
If you were to watch any of the shootout scenes in this movie at home and you just turn the volume way down, I think we'd all realize this isn't actually that tense or well staged or creative.
It is. Yeah.
It's pretty unimpactful.
Yeah.
Uninteresting filmmaking peppered with ear splitting gunshot sounds.
I cannot tell you how loud.
It is just as cheap as when a shitty horror movie just goes bah and scares you.
Yeah.
It takes zero innovation to startle an audience. Just make something sudden and loud. Yeah. That's all you have to do. If the action in Civil War puts you on edge, then you are a human with functioning eardrums.
Yeah.
And I'd say that is as much as the filmmakers accomplished with those scenes.
I think you're fully correct. And there was one point in this movie, I was in IMAX sitting, it was me, empty seat, stranger on one side, me, empty seat, stranger on another side. And there's one point where you get kind of lulled into a silent sense of security. And then it is a gunshot that is so loud, I literally jumped out of my, like, full body erect, my full body was erect, not anything else, out of my seat, like, jumped. And both of the people next to me did too. And then we all went down, and like once your heart rate calms down, you're like, oh, it's just like a one gunshot. But it is so loud that it just jarred you so much. And there is value in that. I do think there's value in getting emotions from an audience, but it is a cheap way to do it. But I think about, there's a shootout scene where one faction's at war with another. There's a guy like hiding behind a pillar. There's two people up top who are shooting at this guy. And you watch these characters make these decisions where you're like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, get that guy out of there. You don't need to go towards him. You don't need to throw absolutely pointless smoke. Like, it's very clearly, it just seems like somebody's like, this is what soldiers do. Cause
yeah, this is like some tactical shit.
Yeah, that, they throw smoke and then terrible things happen to their friends because the smoke wasn't good. Like, and it's just a, like that scene I think was one of the most involved, like with soldier scenes. And it's like, you just think, again, these soldiers aren't acting right. B, they're not going to have these fucking journalists right here. Like, that's nuts. But I don't know enough about war photography to be like, oh, they're never right there with soldiers. But it seems like a stretch, is all I'm saying.
I think we'll get to spoilers soon. Another aspect of this that I just am completely baffled by, this movie uses music, uses needle drops.
Yeah.
It's like a how Scorsese or Spike Lee uses them, where you're watching something terrible, and then just to break the tension, it's like groovy jam comes in.
Groovy jam's a good way to put
it. And the tone in those moments is, I'm just like, what the fuck is happening? What are you even trying to accomplish? And again, that's the moments like that completely undercut anything this movie could have possibly said about capturing beauty in the horror of reality, because reality, it's presenting it in such a stupid way.
Yeah.
At one point, there's this nighttime scene. They're driving through the forest. It's we're watching all this terrible stuff all around.
Forest fire.
And this needle drop comes in, starts with just some soft guitar. And I'm like, this fucking movie is trying to swoon me with this Sturgill Simpson. Go fuck yourself.
I love
Get Sturgill Simpson's name out of your motherfucking mouth.
God, I
it's one of the best songs. And I just sat there listening to it so angrily.
It is one of the best songs. And I literally, Nathan, I was watching this movie and I just thought, he doesn't deserve to be thrown in with this lot. He doesn't deserve to be.
I would love to hear what he thinks of the final product. If he likes how.
I don't think he would. I don't think he would. Yeah, I don't think Sturgill's going to be a fan of this movie. I don't think most people who appreciate movies will be a fan of this movie. This is Men all over again, for the most part. Better than Men, I will say. Better than Men. But not by much. And it's sad to see Alex Garland doing stuff like this when I know he's better than this.
It's so hard to even compare with a movie like Men, because there's aspects of it that... It's
totally different.
It's like, I feel like if a few ingredients had just been a little different, this movie could have been great.
Yeah.
And it's just like, everything is just perfectly wrong enough that I think it's just garbage.
I think it's he knows what shit's going to get a reaction. He knows how to rile people up. But it's the minutiae that I don't think he gives enough attention to. Like, how they get in these situations, or are their reactions based in reality? I think he's much more about just like moving the plot along and shocking the audience every now and then enough to keep them hooked, which is not sound filmmaking. But again, this movie technically looks great. It's loud as fuck, but it sounds pretty good. I didn't hate it. I walked out of Men angry. Like, that was fucking dumb. And I walked out of this one thinking, I need to aggressively contemplate this movie before Nathan and I record, because he's going to have some takes on this. But I thought, I need to really figure out what I liked and what I didn't like about it. And I struggled with even that, because every time you think you might like some part of this film, you think, like, was that intentional? Or was that just my interpretation of it? Was that incidental that I thought that way? Like, it's a very... I don't know. Almost a confusing movie, because you just don't understand what the goal of it is.
Yeah. I'm curious what you... So I would say to everyone, avoid this at all costs. I'm curious what you would say.
I wouldn't say that.
And how, like, would you say that you should go see it in a theater? You should catch it later?
Well, I don't think anyone should watch this after it's out of theaters. I think the only way to see this is probably in theaters, because it should be seen loud, and it should be seen big, and it looks great. And it sounds loud. And I think if you were to watch this at home, you would just be so upset because you're not getting the loud noise, you're not getting the giant visuals, you're just getting the plot and what is not that valuable about it. So I think see this in theaters, and then let's remember it as a one-time thing.
I like thought this, like the Civil War. Throughout, I thought, I just need to soak this in because I'm never watching this again.
I will never watch it again, no. To be fair, I do want, before we like cast judgment on this, I think Kirsten Dunst is phenomenal in this movie. I think she does a great job. I think I want to base my entire future self off of Wagner Moura's character in this because he looks great as a silver fox. And I think Kaylee Spaney, who plays Jesse in this, was also phenomenal. I think the performances were pretty solid all around. And then you have Stephen McKinley Henderson, who's great in this too. But it's so hard to credit a good performance when there's this movie just is like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying? Like, they all played their roles really well, but these roles are all 2 inches deep. There's nothing beyond very, like, they never explain why she was driven to be a war photographer. They never explain why Wagner Moura's character is like so into it. Is like, they don't get into what drives these people to do what they do. They don't get into why they keep getting up day after day to put themselves in these terrible situations. It's just like they're war photographers. That's what they do.
For a movie that focuses mostly on them and their relationships and their stories, doesn't give you much of a reason to actually care about what happens.
No. And but again, is that intentional? I don't fucking know. Does he want it to just be like, hey, there's dozens of people risking their lives every day for this exact shit? Do you appreciate these pictures enough? Then maybe it is a good way to do that. But it seems like there's a much more respectable way to honor the people who do this and to show the reasons why they do it. And I think they try to do that with the younger Jesse character of like, oh, she's involved in this because she's seen the world go to hell and wants to be in. But even then you're like, her dad had some fancy old cameras. That's why she's into it. Like, that's really all you get in this. And
I'd be curious to hear what actual war photographers think of this movie, because I could imagine them being like, what the fuck? You really think that our job is just like doing stupid things to get a beautiful picture? It's so much more than
that. Thank you. Yes. Okay. So if any war photographers are listening, we'd love.
And we know they're out there.
We know you eat fast food. Because you don't have time for a slow food meal on the road. So we'd love for you to write in and tell us what you think about this movie. I am honestly going to look up if there are any war photographers who have reviewed this movie. I'm going to tweet about that and try to get a war photographer to review this movie. Because I really would love to hear what they think about it. And I think that would honestly help me decide if this is a good movie or not. Because I don't know. I still cannot decide. Good performances. Well put together. Is that where the pros stop? I can think of a few more. I don't know.
I think if this movie is attempting to say anything about our world, no matter how specific or broad it is, a movie doesn't have to literally be about America to say something about America, to be an effective allegory for America.
Correct.
I think of just a recent example. I think Dune Part 2, which is a movie that takes place on other planets in the year 10,000, and it's based on a 50-year-old book, I think it has infinitely more to say about our current world than a movie like this, which is literally about our current world.
100%. I agree with that.
And if instead of like the Republic of California and the Florida Alliance, if it was just made up stuff instead, like we're on like planet this, we're fighting planet that, and you just had the same exact movie, the same characters and everything, but it was just the names were replaced and the locations were different.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd at all watch it and be like, that has anything to say about
us. And but I think, again, that's why it makes me think it's just not political at all, because he doesn't try to do that. Like, it's very clear he's not trying to tie one side to one group. Like, it almost seems like the loyalist side, if anything, is framed as a bad people in this movie, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because they say, like, you know, in his third term, does he regret that? And, like, there's really no, and I think, again, it's intentional. There's no, like, good guys or bad guys in this movie. It's soldiers, people fighting each other is how it's defined. And that's why I said at the start, like, I think anyone who's fighting in these wars is one group of people. And then we're led to believe that the only other group of people is war photographers. Because you don't see, you see some passive people who have chosen to actively ignore the Civil War, but you don't see, like, I don't know. It's just, it's not a fully fleshed out world. And I think it's hard to make a feature film without fleshing out all those aspects of the world around you, or making it believable is just so much harder because you need those people who are not one category or the other, and this movie gives you none of them.
Yeah. Well, let's go into spoilers.
We do have a snack to eat.
Yeah, we do. Two little baby, look at these cute little things.
Little bedtime snack. Yeah. Before we do that, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Are you looking for some finger-licking chicken? Does your family need a giant fill-up box? Are 16 to 20-piece chicken family meals not enough to scratch that savory itch? Sign up for the Colonel's Army! We'll give you 3 hots and a cot every day. 2 chicken littles for breakfast, a gallon of mashed potatoes for lunch, and a thigh and a breast for dinner.
Thigh and breast must be obtained through warfare.
If you're nervous about joining the Colonel's Army, you can rest assured you'll never see combat. Popeyes owns the South, and we're heading north. All we have to do is assimilate, and our mediocre chicken will help us do just that. Join the Colonel's Army today at www.usarmy.com.
And we're back, and I'm signing up.
I already enlisted. That's how we got these spoiler snacks.
It's time for our spoiler snack segment, the part of the show where we spoiled this movie with it already spoiled itself, and we eat a snack. We have Popeye's strawberry biscuits.
I opened my snack early, Nathan, and let me tell you, is there a word for like auditory, ocular, what's the word for smells?
Aromal?
The aromal sense in this room right now. I mean, this thing is giving me, okay, what's your favorite
kind? Let me open mine.
Let me just tell you, what's your favorite kind of muffin?
Kind of muffin?
Yeah.
Chocolate chip.
Okay.
Blueberry.
Basic bitch.
I appreciate really all muffins. Orange cranberry.
Thank you. I was hoping you'd get there, and you did. Orange muffins are, in my mind, the best thing humans have ever created, other than capitalism.
Also third on my list.
Yeah, yeah. Orange muffins bring me back to a very safe time in my life. Not that safe in retrospect, but just when I felt safe. They're delicious. I only ate them on special occasions when we could get a bunch of muffins in the morning. They had that sugary crust on the top and just so much moisture and deliciousness and flavor in the bread that you don't get out of any other type of muffin. And this, to me, smells exactly like a good orange muffin. I know it's supposed to be strawberry bullshit. Strawberry biscuit?
I'm open in mine.
Get your schnoz in there. Aromally, how does that feel? Aromally, what does that do for you?
That smells wonderful.
Doesn't that smell fucking good?
It's like that mixed with strawberry shortcake.
Yeah, it's honestly, the smells, I don't want to eat it. Can we not eat it? Can we just talk about how good it smells? Because that smells outstanding.
I don't want to speak too soon, but I think they might recover after their fumble earlier in the game. This smells fantastic.
It smells so fucking good. I don't know if it's a frosting or what's in the bread, but good lord, that smells delicious.
From Popeyes.com, balancing sweet and salty flavors, filled with fruity strawberry bits and topped with creamy icing.
Oh my god. Nathan, it smells, I don't want to eat it, I just want to keep smelling it. It smells so delightful.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, they didn't skimp on the butter in this either, that's for sure. That butter comes through. That butter almost derails the strawberry and the frosting. It tastes like a stick of butter.
The crispy bottom of that biscuit.
Oh, it's nice.
And that buttery inside, icing on top. There's something special about, you know, they didn't just like dump strawberry preserves on a normal biscuit.
Mm-mm.
There's strawberry bits all through the biscuit. It's really tasty.
Man. One of my favorite things on earth is an angel food cake with strawberries and whipped cream.
Yes.
And this is dangerously close to scratching that itch. I feel like, honestly, the most at the forefront of the flavor profile is butter in those. And it's hard because nasally, aromally, as some say, You really get the strawberry and the frosting, but you take a bite and that butter comes through. It honestly feels like a tablespoon of butter in each bite.
You feel like too much butter.
Too much butter.
With the extra time we would get in life from not eating the butter in this biscuit, what the hell are you even going to do with that time?
Masturbate.
Who cares?
Sorry, was that not for me?
Was this your work on top?
I'll frost that, yeah. But I got to figure out how much it's worth on Sperm World first. Well, you don't think it's too buttery?
It's so buttery.
It's really aggressively buttery.
It's pretty hard for me to call something too buttery.
So I'll eat butter plain. I love butter. Let me make that clear. But when you advertise it as a strawberry, I think strawberry cheesecake biscuit or strawberry biscuit, whatever it is, and you make it smell like it's so strawberry forward and so frosting forward, and then you take that bite and all you taste is butter, it's a little off-putting.
They didn't seem to alter their standard biscuit recipe. I mean, they added strawberries, but they didn't take anything away.
I think they said, well, we're adding other stuff. We better double the butter. And then
just to be sure.
Make sure the bottom's crispy because it's literally just sitting in butter cooking.
It's so crispy.
It's really, you know what? It's really fucking good. It's really fucking good. Even I love butter. It still tastes good. It does override it a bit, but it's still delightful. And the strawberries are, yeah, ever-present. It's nice. I'm going to keep talking so Nathan can't finish his. He keeps going to take a bite, but then I keep talking, and he just pulls it away from his mouth. Which, oh, he got close there. Now Nathan! It's so buttery. That has to be so many calories. I'm not going to look it up because I don't want to know.
Do what I do and I just bet, kick that can down the road.
I bet that's 1,000 calories. There's no doubt in my mind that that's 1,000 calories. It's pure butter, little bit of bread, couple strawberries coated in frosting. But I will say, if you're looking for a delicious strawberry baked good, or if you like orange muffins and need to scratch that itch, this is it. Go to Popeyes, KFC's dead, and get the strawberry, possibly cheesecake biscuit? Strawberry biscuit? Strawberry cheesecake biscuit.
No cheesecake. Just a strawberry biscuit is what they call it. I recommend this wholeheartedly. God. Quite the opposite of Civil War. I would just tell everyone.
You're a sick fuck.
To have one.
They aren't really cheap, to be fair.
Tends to be how it goes with food that is horrible for you.
Yeah.
One last bite.
Get into it, man. Live your life.
You know, the last morsel of Civil War, you know, you felt like that's just the beginning. Where's the rest of it? The last bite of this, I'm about as satisfied as any biscuit could make a person.
I do believe that.
And I will be going back for the sequel.
It was pretty tasty, I will say.
The only part of this movie that I really have much else to talk about is the very end. So, if there's other stuff that you want to go through, I mean, we didn't even mention Jesse Plemons.
You know, I had high hopes for that part of the movie whenever he came in. I knew he was in it. I'd seen the stills of him in his red glasses, and I thought, well, that seems like a fun character. His character is not fun at all. Just sucks. Across the board. Sucks as a villain. Sucks as a person. Sucks across the board.
Yeah. I think it's a very effective scene. Think it's just like, here's some dreadful shit happening, and again, it's happening extremely loudly.
It had potential to be so much more impactful than what it was. And it was just nothing. And it reminded me so... That scene in particular reminded me so much of how I felt watching Men in the theater, being like, a lot is happening, it has no effect to really anything. But... Very let down by that. I don't have much else to say about the movie in general. I feel like we've talked about it in general.
The scene where they go to the clothing store, it's from the trailer where he's like, you know there's a civil war happening, right?
So, you know what's funny is I saw that trailer, and I thought, I saw that clip from a trailer, and I thought it was somebody who worked at the store talking to somebody who had walked into the store and like didn't know that there was a civil war going on. So I had framed that scene up so differently in my mind as like a creepy store owner being like a dickhead and being like, you don't know which side are you on, you know? Like, well, show me which side you're on type situation. And then when it got to what it was, I was like, what the fuck is the point of this whole town?
Yeah, I don't have any idea what that scene is for. Is it is the idea that we're supposed to, like, it's kind of funny, the fact that there's this little shop where, and she says,
we'd best stay out of it.
Yeah, like, I think it's trying to be goofy, and you're supposed to laugh at that notion, but I don't get what the proper, what is someone supposed to do?
I keep playing devil's advocate in my own head because I'm trying to justify this as a good movie, but like, when you think of a war photographer, you're absolutely certain, regardless of where you are in a wartime scenario, that you're going to stumble upon somebody still selling their wares, trying to, you know, make money running a business of some sort. And is that, you know, part of the process of war is finding those little pockets where, you know, the war hasn't reached and you can meet people who are happily oblivious to it. Like, is that an important part of that process? I don't know, but it does make you think about, like, wow, if you're really not, like, on the front lines, you're kind of just left to fend for yourself. And even that town has armed men on the roofs and yada, yada, yada. But it's just such a, there's no point. Based on how it plays out in the movie, there's no point for that town to exist or for them to go through it.
Because it feels less like it's pointing out the photographer's expectations and how wrong they were. And it's more like this store clerk is the one who's wrong. Like, she's just, like, saying this dumb thing about, like, we don't get involved. Like,
but do you think it would have been more impactful if they, you know, were in, like, a war zone and crossed past, you know, a home in America that was having a garage sale when the war hit, and, like, it had these dusty, weather-worn clothes that had been on the rack since then, you know, since, like, a year ago? Would it be more impactful for them to go to something like that and, like, try things on their own? Or does it have more impact to know, like, a lot of people are really out of this war and not involved? Like,
it could have been impactful in a different way, feel like it's just a pointless scene that's just there for a trailer.
Yeah.
It makes for a good, the contrast, it's a good succinct way of saying, like, shit's fucked up for some people, but not for other people.
Yeah, but it's, again, there's just such better ways to do that. And that, like, they leave that area, and you're like, oh, nothing else comes up. Okay, all right, they're on to the next thing. Which I feel like is how this movie makes you feel a lot. Like, okay, they're just trucking on.
The final action sequence is an assault on the White House and the Capitol by the Western forces. They pretty easily make their way in.
Yep.
They just kill everyone on site. Someone tries to negotiate with them. That person has zero leverage, and I don't even know what they're trying to accomplish, and they're obviously going to get just
hoping
shot
for that promo from the president, I think. Hoping for a promotion.
And the hallway fight, just the last bit, that last shootout.
Yeah.
That's when, I don't remember the name, but Caitlin Spaney is the actress. She
Jessie.
Jumps out into the hallway.
To take a picture.
When she's obviously going to get shot. Gets pushed over by Kirsten Dunst. Who then, instead of tackling her, like, running to the side, she stands there. I feel like in that moment she's kind of accepted that she's going to die, so she's, I don't know.
You almost think, and this might just be me, but you almost think based on her character's journey, like, she's ready to die.
Yeah,
because she has that breakdown kind of when they're, like, ducking and there's that shootout at the gate of the White House. Like, she is in a place that is,
like, she can't go on.
She cannot keep doing this. And I think that's very clear. So I think that when she stood there like that, I thought, she's done. Like, she's accepted that she's done.
And then the moment it's absurd. And I don't think absurdity's not inherently bad. Like, it really does start to feel like a satire when the moment this happens, Caitlin Spaney's on the ground and just whips out the camera to take the pictures. Again, it makes for a gorgeous shot.
Yeah.
That sequence of watching Kirsten Dunst die in still frames is stunning. Like, I've never seen something like that before. But it's either a moronic thing to do, or we're not even supposed to see it that way. We're just supposed to, like, it's just a joke at that point. And then they go into the Oval Office and ask the president for a quote. I need a quote. He says, "Don't let them kill me."
Yep.
That'll do. And they shoot him.
I think, all right, two things. I'll get to the quote. I think her dying and her taking those pictures right away as she dies is a reference to earlier on in the film where there's the suicide bomber who blows up the water truck and kills countless civilians, and Kirsten Dunst immediately starts taking pictures again. I think that's a throwback to that, saying you don't get to stop because something terrible happens. You need to get right back to work if you want to get the good pictures. If you want to get the pictures of people trying to put out fires on other people, if you want to get the pictures that are really going to send the messages and stick in people's brains, you don't get to wait for a safe time. You don't get to wait until you feel good. You have to go right away, regardless of what. If 20, 30 people just got blown up in front of you, you don't get to wait and mourn them. You have to go shoot that immediately to get those good pictures. I think that didn't bug me that much because I thought that was her kind of taking, you know, the relay baton in that sense, like, you know, being like, I can't, she can't die in vain, almost. Like, I need to capture this. Yes, I think it's ridiculous pacing-wise, and probably not realistic.
That decision happening in like a quarter second is sure. The absurdity. But I get what you're saying.
Yes. With the quote at the end, they mention like Gaddafi and other leaders who got killed by their people at the end, like, they're always lesser than you'd think. I think that's what he's trying to hammer home with that quote. It's a quote that I think would honestly make fucking great headlines. Please don't let them kill me is like the ultimate anchor for a story, or like the ultimate clickbait that you would need for people to get on your website. I don't know.
But don't you feel like that last moment of him and his, he's saying it like smirkingly, like, that'll do. Like, it's, if that's really the moment you end on, that's like the summation that you want to leave people with. Is this whole movie just saying, like, look at these soulless, blood-sucking photographers who are only there for the quote or the shot?
I don't know if it's that. I think it's, again, I think the president's framed up as a bad guy in this. A guy who chose to stay a third term. A guy who divided the United States, who refuses to back down. Take your sides as you will. I think it's him being like, I'm fucking done. You're dead. And now we can move on to, like he says earlier, like, all these forces that have fought to defeat that guy are going to eat each other alive. So I think it's kind of like a, I've checked the box for that chapter. I'm ready to move on to the next chapter. He wants a quote. Regardless of what comes out of the president's mouth, that's the quote he's going to put in. I don't think, if he says, long live America, he'd say, that's okay. If he said, you know, power to the loyalists or whatever it is, like, that's, he'd say, yep, that's good. Like, he just,
but it's, in terms of storytelling, it's very intentional that it's a man pleading for his life and someone looks in his eye and just says, that'll do, as he gets shot. Yeah. I think it's very purposeful that that's how we end it.
I don't know if it is. The last two movies from this guy, purpose is not important, it seems.
I just can't believe that the same person made these four movies.
It seems like there's something going on. Like, he's got, like, something's being blocked. Like, I don't know what it is, but, like, something's not, it doesn't compute to me how he can make two perfectly crafted, almost perfectly crafted, super meaningful movies, and then two movies that are so arbitrary and almost pointless that it's mind-numbing. But maybe it's a bit. Who knows? Maybe he's a comedian. It's just a big bit. I don't know. It's frustrating, though.
Quite the opposite of those young filmmakers you mentioned earlier. He's like, it's rare for someone to fall off the list of directors whose work I need to check out, but it's going to be really hard for me to get excited about whatever he does next.
I think Men, my curiosity was piqued. My excitement was piqued. I had never... Maybe The Green Knight was the only other movie that let me down that much in recent years. And this movie has made me 100% certain that I will not get excited about another Alex Garland movie until I've seen it. I'm not going to be happy about it. I'm not going to be excited about it. People ask me, have you seen that trailer? I'm going to say, fuck you. Get away from me. I hope you die.
And that's our show.
And on that note, farewell forever.
You mentioned earlier that you know what he's doing next. What is it?
It's a movie based on... Oh, God damn it. So he made that statement like, I think I'm going to retire because filmmaking's not as satisfactory. And then he came out like 2 days later and was like, wow, the press really ran with that one fucking sentence I said. Like, I'm not done making movies. And he's already casted somebody. Fuck, it was an interesting topic. That's the thing. Yeah, here we go. Warfare.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
He seems to have a handle on that.
So it's got Michael Gandolfini, James Gandolfini's son.
Sure.
Noah Centineo, or Centineo.
Yeah, the Netflix guy.
Yeah, the Netflix guy. Taylor John Smith, Aiden Bradley.
And there's no other what it's about. It's just...
Yeah, there's no storyline or plot that's leaked, but it's called Warfare. I think it's supposed to be more historical, but I can't be sure.
That reminds me. What disappointed me even more is that before I saw Civil War, I watched Alex Garland's top four, like his Letterboxd interview on the red carpet, yeah. And I always love watching those and seeing what filmmakers cite as like their biggest inspirations.
Yeah.
He cited this movie called Come and See, which is often...
Oh, that's like a...
Well, it's often referred to as the most anti-war war movie ever. It's just ever.
A brutal depiction of war.
And I saw that and thought...
You watched that?
No. I saw this video, and I saw him cite that, and I know this movie's reputation. I've never watched it myself. But just seeing that, I was like, now that intrigues me. Because if he's saying... If that's in his mind when he makes this movie... That means that this is going to be like an anti-war war movie. That's going to be interesting. Now, after seeing Civil War, I feel like, does he think he's making an anti-war movie? Because I think nothing to say about war.
Come and See is a movie that is similar in its sense of not taking sides and showing the brutality of war. And just letting the viewer decide. So I can almost see that influence of him not wanting to be like, one side's good, one side's bad. It's this movie, Civil War, is much more about war's brutal, and it sucks for everyone involved in it. And I can see how that influence would have influenced him. But Come and See is head and tails above what he's done here. That's for sure. What were his other three?
I don't remember. I just
who cares?
I just in retrospect, it frustrates me even more to know that.
Yeah, but
I don't know what he thinks this movie is. And I'm going to probably eat up some interviews, and I'm going to read other people's takes on this. I'm curious to expand my conception of what this is. I hope to someday like it more than I do now.
I don't think you will. I think people were really excited for it. I think it's going to be a letdown basically across the board. Cause it's not anything anyone wanted, and it's... Not anything anyone didn't want, but it's just so middle of the road. Again, I think you should see it in theaters. It is an experience. I think it's got some great aspects to it. It's well made. It's well acted. But overall, you're going to leave being like, this is a pilot to a 10-episode series where I'm going to find out way more about these characters' backstories and way more about what drives them. And then I'll actually care by episode 4 or 5. But you don't get that. You get this hour and a half, hour 50 minutes maybe with these people. And a lot of your questions won't be answered. And it's not going to be very satisfying. And but it's going to sound and look pretty good.
Speaking of being left unsatisfied, you can find all of our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are found.
And if you like what you hear, you want to support the show, feel free to leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. I know most of you are iTunes or Apple Podcast, I guess, as the kids say these days. But if it's Spotify, leave it there. Or, you know what, if you don't want to leave a review, you can buy some Fast Food Film Friends merch at fastfoodfilmfriends.com.
You can find Kevin's steaming hot takes on Instagram at Fast Food Film Friends, Twitter at FFFF Podcast. Email us at fastfoodfilmfriends@gmail.com. Let us know what we should watch or eat next time. Kevin, next episode, this year's summer movie wager. It's almost time.
Already.
How are you feeling about the summer?
I know nothing about the summer. Some Apes? That's right at opening weekend of the summer movie wager.
It's up there.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything, but I'm excited to make some terrible wagers with you and our mediocre friends.
Until then.
Farewell.